When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Humana Honor Medicare Advantage Plan gives you $1,860 back each year in your Social Security check. Choose coverage that helps you keep more money in your pocket. Learn more at GetHumana.com. Humana, a more human way to healthcare. The Part B Give Back benefit pays part or all of your Part B premium, and the amount may change based on the amount you pay for Part B. Limitations and restrictions may apply. Humana is a Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO organization with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in any Humana plan depends on contract renewal.
They are Sports Illustrated.
It's amazing.
This incredible body of work.
I really appreciate the integrity.
Everything you do is well done.
You guys do a great job.
We love it. What can we say?
He's Chris Mannix.
He's employed by Sports Illustrated.
The announcer's got it in for me.
There you go.
This is the Crossover NBA Podcast.
You have a problem with it? Build a team that can beat them.
Hosted by the one and only.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God.
Chris Mannix.
All right. Stop number two on the NBA Crossover Podcast Tour here in Washington, D.C., home of the Washington Wizards. Thank you, everybody, for being here tonight. I had a great time in Boston last night. I'm going to finish this up in Brooklyn and then Philly later on next week. I'm excited about this panel. I'm excited about our guest, Tommy Shepard, the GM of the Wizards, is here. He's going to join us a little bit later on. Yeah. Already here to see what his beat writers say about him at some point here. To my left, she is the Wizards beat writer for the Washington Post. Now in her fourth season, as she said, a long four seasons covering the Washington Wizards, Candace Buckner from the Post. And he is the Wizards reporter for The Athletic in his second season covering the team, Fred Katz. And he is a senior writer for Sports Illustrated whose connection to the Wizards is that he loves them more than anyone on the SI staff, Andrew Sharp. All right, guys. Just looking back at last year, 32-50, the Wall injury obviously derailing any kind of hopes they had of doing anything during the season. Was it as simple as that, Candace? Was it the John Wall injury changed everything, or was it more to it than that?
I think you can't talk about the season without the injuries. It's not just John Wall. It was Dwight Howard. He came here on the cheap, but in the few games that he did play, the guy could still rebound. He could still defend, and then you lose him, and you kind of have to go deep into your roster. And although you found a gem in Thomas Bryant, they weren't whole the whole season, and you kind of have to piecemeal pieces together, and yeah, that affects. But there are some things that those players on the court still could have done. That's play hard on a consistent basis, and sometimes that didn't happen. Defend, that didn't happen. But there were other good gems good things that they did, like they could still score. And you know, with the two-time All-Star and Bradley Beal, they didn't lose track with that. But yeah, the injuries were a major factor that shouldn't be forgotten.
Fred, what did you think? Just what was the turning point last year?
The turning point, I mean, the injuries definitely affected it, but at the same time, like, I think one of the big things the Wizards are trying to overcome this year is that they're trying to change how they operate from an off-the-court perspective. They certainly had a cultural issue. There was kind of a stuffiness in last year's locker room, and yeah, John Wall got hurt, and that is an extremely bad thing to happen to a team, an extremely bad thing to happen to John Wall. It's not like they were great when John Wall went down. They started off losing 9 of their first 11 and kind of struggled out of the gate, and you never really got the sense they were going to end up picking it back up. And so, you know, when you have those cultural issues, I think there was a little bit of even a player-to-player accountability issue, a communication problem there, and that feeds into the defense and the rebounding problems and all that. They're trying to bring in now personalities who are going to be able to mesh with that well. They really trust Bradley Beal as a personality, not just a player at the top of the locker room, the way that the way that he just conducts himself, comports himself as a leader and a teammate. I think they're very excited about that, and I think everybody who knows Brad is very excited about that. So that, I think, is the main thing that they're trying to change under this new regime.
Andrew, you watched it from a bit of a national perspective there. What were your observations?
A lot of the same, similar to what Fred said. I mean, look, I'm grateful for Tommy because we definitely needed a little bit of a cultural shift. You guys were there every night. Like,
I love the we call.
Well, yeah, we, sorry.
Like, we needed that cultural
I'm
shift.
I'm sorry, we did. All right, the whole city needed it. But as far as that season, like, the Wall injury is, if anything, a little bit misleading because those first few weeks were just miserable. And you would be in the locker room, you guys more often than me, but, like, every single player would just say, oh, well, we got to defend better. We got to compete on defense, and that's how we win. And then they wouldn't do it. And Austin Rivers became, like, the ombudsman of the team and would just go on these, like, five-minute monologues after every game. And it was just sort of like a lifeless atmosphere. And so if nothing else, there's nowhere to go but up from where they were a year ago.
So, Candace, you agree, lifeless atmosphere with that assessment?
Well, I go back to Sacramento. I think it was game four, and after losing, it's game four, and John and Brad, working in concert, but in separate times when they talk to the press, calling their teammates out after a loss, and calling out bad defense, and you kind of get they were talking about specific players, and you piece it together and kind of find out who they're talking about. So I see your point.
Well,
that
yeah.
Even
so
then,
maybe lifeless and toxic atmosphere too.
You know, besides the injuries, so many guys on one-year contracts, and it sounds like a cliche, but you have so many guys kind of playing for their next deal. It's just a bad mix to start the season.
Yeah. John Wall thinks that was the problem. Like, that's the first thing John Wall brings up. If you ask him what was the problem last year, the first thing that he will bring up, I don't know if that means he thinks it's the biggest problem, but at least he thinks it's important. He'll bring up, like, even at the start of last year, on the first day of the season, John was talking about, what year was it, 16, the last Whitman year, when they had, like,
yes.
11 guys. They had, like, 11 guys, and they fell to 41-41, and 11 guys were coming off their contract that year, or 10, or whatever it was, and John believed that season it was just kind of an everybody trying to get theirs culture. And he said that's something they're going to have to overcome this year. And then the first day of this year, he came in and said that he thought it was a problem last year, too. It's a different kind of thing this year. There are guys who were on one-year deals, but, you know, they bring in Ish Smith, and he's a two-year guy. They re-signed Thomas Bryant. They give him three, and that kind of the main guys who they want. The Jamario Joneses of the world are not going to be a problem.
These like, guys are going to be malcontents. It's just like a bucket of sunshine already.
Yeah, that's true.
This is good, though, because Mannix is up with the Celtics constantly. And, Chris, this is how the other half lives. Not every team overachieves
Did
every
you
year.
Watch the Celtics
Actually,
last year?
Actually, great point. Great point. We need to bookend some time for some Kyrie stories.
You said a bucket of sunshine is what the Celtics are now. Like, now, it's the couple of days I've been around. Like, they're just – everything is awesome in that group now that Kyrie is no longer a part of it.
Yeah. I mean, look, Kyrie – Lord only knows what kind of stories we haven't heard yet about some of the stunts Kyrie was pulling last year. But I think that entire team just started out expecting to sort of show up and win 60, 65 games. And then once it got tough, everybody just splintered. So they got to enjoy some misery, too. It was nice to see as a Wizards fan.
Fred, was there a problem then with leadership? I mean, Candace kind of mentioned, you know, the passive-aggressive mentioning of guys. You know, who are you actually talking about? Was that a problem last year?
Sure. I mean, I think any time you admittedly have a cultural problem, everybody's got to take some amount of blame in that. And if you have that sort of problem, and everybody with the Wizards has pretty much admitted that they believe that to be the case, then I think leadership certainly has to take on at least some of the responsibility, because that's the job of being a leader, right? I mean, the whole point of that, I mean, even we talk about Kyrie. Kyrie, during his opening press conference in Brooklyn, comes right out and says that he thought he failed as a leader last year. And I think Yeah. Anytime you have that sort of culture that's building up, that sort of staleness within a team and you know, from everything from the people who work in the front office to coaching staff to players, I think everybody's got to kind of share some amount of responsibility in that. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Candace, how much, you know, a healthy John Wall and Bradley Beal, especially in a league that's now kind of duo defined, that could make some noise, especially in a conference like this. But the injury to John Wall, I mean, how much does that change what this team is going to have to be?
A lot. It's funny, when I was looking at Media Day photo shoots and I saw that picture, they were taking photos of each other. They were taking photos of those two, and it's the same picture for the last 8 years, those two together. And you're thinking, like, man, if John was healthy this year, Brad is coming into his prime. John is still there, and he obviously next year he'll be 30, but he's still there. He's still one of the best point guards. What if, like, what the Wizards could be if they could be healthy together in this new kind of changing landscape. How does that change, you were saying? I think it definitely gives Isaiah Thomas an opportunity to kind of remake and redefine the narrative of his team, of his career, mm-hmm. you know, once he gets healthy in place. So it makes the team a little bit more Brad-centric, and it gives guys like, you know, Isaiah Thomas, when he's back and healthy, an opportunity. But I'm just curious to just see, besides the young guys developing and progressing, which, you know, the season is about, you know, how competitive they can be in the East.
Can I just add something on to that? So for the last 10 years, basically, John Wall has missed the majority of the last – he missed half a season 2 years ago. He missed 50 games last year. And so you think Bradley Beal has kind of gotten his opportunity being the head of the team, because operationally he has. But each of those 2 years, they entered training camp thinking that John Wall was going to be the head of their offense. Even if you thought that Bradley Beal was a better player, John Wall is the guy who is going to initiate the offense, bring up the ball, dominate the offense. His fingerprints are going to be more on the offense just because he's a point guard who likes to handle the ball and operate out of the pick and roll. That's his style. And this is the first training camp in a decade where the Wizards are able to actually form an offense. And if you ask any team, if someone gets hurt in the middle of the year, they'll tell you, well, you need a training camp to implement this. Because there's a difference between implementing a play or taking away a play, or implementing a style, taking away a style, and actually putting in an entire system. Almost any coach will tell you can't put in a system, at least effectively, in the middle of a year. And this year, they have an actual opportunity during training camp, during the preseason, to work a system that doesn't have John Wall in it. Now, I don't know the specifics of what they're going to do because we haven't seen them play, but there are going to be different things. Like, Bradley Beal is going to be used differently. They're going to take advantage of Davis Bertans' shooting. And I could see Thomas Bryant. Thomas Bryant had an excellent offensive season last year. A lot of it was just kind of other people facilitating for him finishing around the rim. I could see him actually holding the ball for more than a second at the time at certain points this year. Like, I think there are going to be different parts of their system which are going to say, man, we haven't seen that. And I think part of the reason for some of those things is because they didn't have a training camp to put it in. And now without John Wall, they're able to prepare a little bit differently.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. Andrew, the most interesting guy, or one of the most interesting guys in the league this year, is to me, is Isaiah Thomas. And like, mm-hmm. what does Isaiah have left in the tank at this point? I don't know that Denver last year is necessarily a reflection of what he has left. He was hurt all year. And then he stepped back into an impossible situation. Like, you step back in the Nuggets, and they're already 10 deep. They can't afford to bring you along slowly while they're trying to win the Western Conference. It doesn't work like that. But I don't know what the injury has taken away from Isaiah fully. When he was in Boston, the thing the Celtics coaches often told me was that what made him so great was that he was indefatigable out there. He just moved all the time. You know, he gave up the ball. He would run around, get the ball back. You just couldn't tire him out. And that's what made him so effective offensively. Boston put in a great scheme for him, too. They built that offense in part around him. When he gets healthy and back on the floor, I'm very interested to see what he has left there physically, what he's able to do out there.
Yeah, so my hopes...
That's not optimistic. That's a very, like, Mr. Optimism here.
Look, I feel obligated to be a little honest here. Isaiah, we were saying before this, like, among high-profile guys in the NBA... Isaiah is as down-to-earth and authentic as just about anyone you will meet in the NBA. And so for that reason, and we all watched everything he went through in Boston, and the way it worked out made everyone unhappy. Even people with the Celtics they felt bad for the way it broke for Isaiah. So everyone is rooting for him to do well. But the track record of guys coming back from that injury isn't great. And at the same time, Isaiah, just given the way he's built, like he has a smaller margin for error than most guys in the NBA. So, I mean, he's going to have to prove a lot of people wrong. And the fun thing about Isaiah is that, like, that's when he thrives. And so he's definitely looking forward to proving skeptics like me wrong. And it'll be a lot of fun to see him have kind of some sort of renaissance season this year because the Wiz need him.
Well, one thing, Candace, you're not going to take Isaiah's confidence away from him. He is going to continue to believe that if given the opportunity, he can be that guy. He can be the exact same guy he was in Boston again. What are your expectations for him?
It would have been nice to see him this preseason, but obviously that's not going to happen, and you're not going to see him maybe until the first game here. But my expectations, I think, realistic. I think 15 points. Would that be too much?
I think it'd be pretty good for Isaiah.
If he can score double digits on a consistent basis, spell Bradley Beal a couple games, and he's like the guy, I think he would surpass expectations. I don't think you're going to see Isaiah Thomas of 2017. That would be amazing if that happens. Won't. But if he can be like a 15 point per night guy, of course maybe they'll watch his minutes. But his shooting.
Right?
I'm just wondering if his shooting is back.
Yeah.
And you really haven't had time to for Isaiah. He really hasn't had time to really get reps.
Well, he needs more of that shooting because he's not able to explode the way he used to be. And so I think that's going to be one of the questions. I mean, that was one of the questions when he was with Cleveland in L.A. Like, the shooting wasn't quite there. But granted, like, he was more hurt then than he will be this year. So that's room for optimism. Mm-hmm.
All right, let's talk. Oh, Freddie, you want to add to that or no?
No, I mean,
no, just, you're good.
So much of what I made Isaiah successful when he was at his absolute best was obviously he could shoot, but he was this really small dude who was so good at getting to and finishing around the rim with all those crafty moves and got a really good free throw rate, like got to the line a lot. If he's able to get a little bit of separation so he can do some of that stuff, because a lot of his finishes weren't necessarily athleticism. They were just kind of crafty skill. Mm. And so if he is healthy enough to where he can get some separation and do that kind of stuff, I feel like that's when he could maybe make some moves. And if he's going against second unit guys and that kind of stuff, you can just kind of let him roast because you can allow a second unit guy to do that for 16 minutes a night. But if he's unable to do that, then I think that's where kind of the struggles come in. But I think if he can do that, then you have somebody who can be a solid enough second unit squad.
I'm rooting for him, man. Like he, and besides like the money part of it and how much he missed out on, like he's just a likable guy who, if he's playing well, fans are going to love him. Like he just plays so hard and relentless all the time that he's just such an easy guy to kind of root for. So we'll see.
Small guys are fun.
Small guys are fun to root for.
Small guys are fun. It's fun to watch like a really small dude go up against a 7-footer and be like, I am going to be better at you at being tall.
Mm, no question. All right, so let's talk about what's probably going to be an ongoing storyline all season long. If you see Tommy Shepard on a cell phone, there's a possibility it's like Daryl Morey in Houston or Pat Riley in Miami calling to ask about the availability of Bradley Beal. Candace, we talked about how, with Wall and Beal healthy, you want to build around those two guys. Tommy's been pretty consistent. They want Bradley Beal to be part of the future. Let me just put a subjective hat on. Should that be the approach that the team takes? Bradley Beal as a centerpiece of a rebuild or somebody that, as one of the biggest stars or best young players in the NBA, could be an incredibly valuable trade asset?
Well, Bradley's saying all the right things, even when he, is kind of on autopilot and talking to us.
How often does that happen?
When he's on autopilot?
The autopilot, yeah.
Well, it happened at Media Day. It was some question about, like mentoring or getting to know Rui Hachimura, the new rookie who is from Japan, and you know, obviously he's been in America for a while, but he's a little quiet. And so Bradley was just saying, you know, Rui doesn't talk to me, but I'll be here all year. We have time to build a relationship. So that would be great to hear if you're reading between lines. So again, Bradley's saying all the right things. However, I think there will come a time with 2 years remaining on his contract. You have to really ask some hard questions, Thomas Shepard, about what you want to do if he starts expressing some things that may seem like he wants to get out the door. And Tommy will talk for himself, but Tommy has said repeatedly, hey, I see him every day, and we talk all the time. And
are you trying to do a Tommy Shepard accent there?
I was really trying to do a
effort?
Tommy accent.
Why don't we just pull Tommy on stage?
Make him really uncomfortable and corner him in front of all these people.
But you know, that's just to say that Bradley and Tommy and the Wizards, they have a relationship, and what they're seeing from Bradley in his body language and his actions are convincing them that you can build with him in these next 2 years. He's here. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I would.
The full 2 years?
That decision would be as easy for me if I was in his seat.
Andrew?
Well, I think it's going to be one of the most interesting things in the league right now. I mean, I was in Philly on Monday and was talking to a couple people, national reporters, and like the first thing anyone asks is like, where do you think Brad ends up? And I don't know. He wants to be here right now. The Wizards want him here right now. I definitely, as a like closet fan, have had a lot of time to think about where I
closeted
would want
fan.
Him.
I was gonna say, where is this closet? This closet is wide open.
It is what it is. But looking across the league, the one team that I keep coming back to, because he's the type of guy who can kind of like tilt the title race either this year or even next year if they try to trade him in July. But most of the contenders like don't have much else to trade. The Clippers just gave up the farm for Paul George. The Nets, I mean, Caris LeVert's good, but like let's not get carried away. The team that I would target is the Pelicans, because they're going to be a little thirsty, and Zion would fit really well with Beal. Ingram and Beal don't fit particularly well, and they have those Lakers picks. So, Tommy, if you're listening, you can hit up who took over New Orleans?
David Griffin.
Hit up Griff.
Easy guy to get along with.
Exactly. One of the most personable guys in the league.
Fred, what's your take on the Beal situation?
You know, what I think is interesting about Beal is I think a lot of people who believe that they should trade him believe that a trade should happen sooner rather than later. But next summer's free agency class is so weak. Mm-hmm. That if Beal were to change teams, and as Candace said, Tommy and the organization has repeatedly said they don't want to do it and has repeatedly told other teams no. But if they decide they do want to change to trade him, if they have a change of heart and there is a trade made at any point between like the trade deadline in February and all the way through the summer, he could be the best player traded or that changes teams over that time, because the free agency class is just so weak. And so that dynamic there of like the reason we're talking about Bradley Beal as a free agent right now, even though he's not a free agent for 2 years, is because next summer's class is so weak, and because he's kind of, you know, last year it was Anthony Davis. Where's he going to go? Before that, it was Paul George. Where's he going to go when he was with Indiana? And so I do think you could get a huge haul for Beal, even if you wait and you want to see what he decides he wants to do. You want to see what direction the organization's going in. You want to see how this rebuilding year goes, and maybe Hachimura ends up being really good. Maybe you find some other diamond in the rough, and it makes
I think
it
a part
viable.
Of it though too is like, isn't it like, what is John going to be when he comes back?
Totally.
Yep. Like if these young guys develop, and I've written and I've said a couple of times, more than a couple of times, I think Scott is one of the better developmental coaches in the NBA. I mean, what he did in Oklahoma City, you know, these guys were talented, but somebody has to develop them along the way. And I thought he did a really good job at that. If these young guys over the course of the year, and I want to get to some of them specifically in a minute, but if Rui develops, if Troy Brown develops, Thomas Bryant develops, then you start to wonder, like, if John comes back in 2020, 2021 and is like, I don't know, 75, 80% of the John Wall we saw, that's still a team that you can kind of build around, right? That you can still sort of add piece to that and hope you can win something.
The other thing that I would add that I've enjoyed is, like, Brad wants to be here, and while he's here, he's embracing the role as franchise leader, franchise cornerstone, and that wasn't true with someone like Jimmy Butler, who was, like, miserable and wreaking havoc in Minnesota 12 months ago today. And the same was true with Anthony Davis. Like, I think that Beal, as long as he's here, is going to really take pride in sort of assuming that role of leading the franchise. And so that also gives the Wizards a little bit more leeway in terms of the timeline here, because I agree with Fred. I think teams are going to be just as desperate in July as they might be in January and February. So there's some room for the Wiz to sort of wait a little bit.
Which brings to the question, Candace. I mean, being a general manager is certainly hard, but all GMs, you're as good as who you draft. Like, as simple as that. I mean, the Golden State Warriors were great, you know, not necessarily because Kevin Durant, but because Steph Curry, the third point guard taken in this draft. Klay Thompson in the, you know, was he 10th overall the year he was drafted. Draymond Green, second round. You succeed if you draft well. What you guys have been around this team every day for the last couple of years. What do you think of the young talent that's here? Specifically, I guess I'm talking about Troy Brown, the first round pick last year. You got Rui coming in, limited what you've seen of him this year, but Satoransky, another top player. What do you think of the young core that they're trying to build here?
Troy hasn't been able to practice for a while, and again, he may miss all of preseason. But besides just the draft, I thought it was just so clever, go back to Thomas Bryant, to pick that guy up from the waiver wire. And somebody like Morris Wagner and Isaac Bonga, who came in at the trade with L.A., maybe like that. Just those diamonds in the rough that 29 other teams didn't know about, but they made a clever decision and trusted a guy, brought him in on very minimum salary, and he just balled out and became like prototype of the type of Wizards player. I'm just pretty much telling you what I wrote about today, so why don't you guys go to WashingtonPost.com and
read about that. It's regurgitating the column there.
But besides, yeah, Satoransky, great find in the second round, but finding like a waiver wire pickup, I think that's they don't have a lot of money to spend, and so you kind of do have to be clever in how you find your talent, and you know, Thomas Bryant was one of those, and I actually do think Wagner could be like the next guy that just shocks everybody.
You know, it's funny because they kind of have this reputation for, in some ways, the last whatever it's been, 5 years, of not really valuing draft picks because they've traded away a lot of second rounders and that kind of stuff under Ernie Grunfeld. But when they've picked, they've done a good job. Like, Kelly Oubre was a good pick in the middle of the first round. Troy Brown looks like he could be a pretty solid pick in the middle of the first round. Satoransky in the second round is a great pick. Like, Thomas Bryant is a guy who, yeah, they claimed him off waivers, but the reason they claimed him off waivers after he played, like, 2 minutes with the Lakers the year before was because they really liked him around draft time. He became available, and they grabbed him. They've done a really good job, I think, identifying talent. They just haven't necessarily had the resources to go get that talent. Now, they gave away some of the resources in trades, and that's on them, but they've done a good job, and I think this past summer they kind of went the opposite direction. Tommy Shepard was just like, he got 4 second-round picks, and he was like, I'm just going to go gobble up a bunch of second-round picks, and we're going to have to restock the cupboard. And the more chances you have, the more, it's not about the batting average, right? It's just how many hits you get. So if you go 3 for 4 or you go 3 for 12, it doesn't really make a difference. And I think they're just trying to make sure they get as many swings as they possibly can now.
Andrew?
What I like about where the Wizards are with their young players is that they've bought a lot of lottery tickets that may pay off in like 2022 or 23, because I think that's where, like, look, the last couple years have not gone the way anyone would have wanted them to. And at this point, I think the best case scenario is for the Wiz to be sort of like Brooklyn Nets-ish over the last few years, where, all right, compete, and then also sort of take flyers on guys like Isaac Bonga, who was the youngest player in the NBA last year, still has a lot of room to grow. Troy Brown is someone who, like, I don't know, I watched Troy Brown last year. I don't think he's that close to, like, contributing now, but the idea of what he could be makes sense to me. And that's sort of the approach to take, is try to, like, compete now and then give yourself some chances to maybe get a couple, like, quality starters or better in a few years. And so Like Mo Wagner is a good example of someone who I wasn't like blown away watching him last year, the few minutes he played in LA, but a lot of people over the summer had great things to say about Wagner and said like, oh, we worked him out, we love that dude. And so I'm excited to see where some of those guys go this year.
All right. Well, Candace, Fred, Andrew, thanks for joining me guys up here. And when we come back, Wizard General Manager Tommy Shepard. All right, welcome back. Joining me now on the podcast in his 17th season with the Washington Wizards. He's had, I think, just about every job you could possibly have within this organization. He is the new general manager of the Wizards, Tommy Shepard. What's up, Tommy?
How you doing there, Chris? Welcome to the district.
Have you had every job in the organization? You've had a few.
I've had a few. The only one that matters is the one you have right now, and it's a big one. We're having a great time, though. It's been a really, really refreshing, really, since April. Moving forward, it's been a whirlwind, and I think we don't take enough time to look back and celebrate some of the things that we've been able to establish and put in place and start moving, because there's always something else going on. Mm-hmm. And I'm real clear with my wife on my tombstone. I don't want my name or dates or anything. It was always something. That's all it's going to be on there, because it is. It's always something. Mm-hmm. You know, you're getting through, getting ready. Had a great September. All of our players are here, and then all of a sudden, Troy's calf pops, and that was a bum. For us, that was a bummer because we projected him to be a starter. And as we're trying to get Troy's mind around, it's not permanent. This is 6 weeks at the most and get back. But he was really distraught because he knows all the work that he put in. And each player, you got to understand your health is your wealth. And it is a team sport, but ultimately you're trying to get ready for an 82-game season. You put all the time in. That was unfortunate, but it's not permanent. So using Troy as an example, a couple other guys banged up. The league doesn't care. We checked. No one cared. We got to get the next person out on the floor and get them ready, and that's just a great opportunity for someone else. I think Toronto taught the league a lesson last year. You better have depth if you're going to move forward and try to be competitive. So it gives us, you know, it probably wasn't the plan that we had in mind, but let's see what the third unit can do. That wasn't the first executable, but that's what we're doing, and so far so good.
What was this summer like for you as, you know, Ernie leaves – and then the whole process plays out pretty publicly with Tim Connelly. There was the report about Masai Ujiri. All the while, you're doing the job every single day, and you're kind of seeing this play out around you. What was that like for you personally?
You know, it was funny because I was never trying to get the job. I was just trying to do the job and show Ted what we had that was in-house, that was really capable. This was before we ever brought anybody on board. That we had a lot of unharnessed talent that had given them an opportunity and see what they can do. And I think we all were relishing the opportunity to try some things that you always think, hey, this could work. And so I didn't really worry about the outside noise. Ted and I were speaking every day, and he's giving me updates. And, you know, it's not like I'm going to ask him, hey, how did I do today? You know, if he's going to tell you did something wrong, then you have to learn from that. If you're doing things the right way, you don't expect to hear anything different. And, you know, all the stuff around, I think most people that know me, I'm pretty good at tuning out outside noise. And, you know, Tim especially, you know, that's a dear friend of mine. It's like a brother. So if there was anything that was to happen and he was going to get the job, you know, I was celebrating for him if that was how it was going to be. But certainly that wasn't what my wish is, to be here, to take this franchise to the next level. It's going to take a lot of work, and you definitely have to have a plan that you need to stay committed to, but be flexible. And that was my focus. So that's all I really cared about. It was entertaining, though, for all the calls coming. I was like, am I sick? I mean, getting all these calls, like, I'm so sorry. I can't believe all this. I was like, God, dog. Somebody knew something I didn't.
Is, you know, when a general manager is relieved, like Ernie, whether it's the organization or the fans, oftentimes they want change. They wanted something different. That means...
I've heard that.
It's out there. Did you feel like you had to show, whether it was the organization or the fans, that you represented change, that you had a vision that maybe was different, that could lead this team in a different direction?
I felt like anything that we were doing had to be authentic. You can't just kind of make this facade or an illusion to try to please what you think the fans want. What the fans want is transparency, a plan, and let's go through this together and be real clear about what your goals are. That's pretty simple for me. I'm a pretty transparent person. I think fans want to see progress, and they want to know at all times that you care about the team as much as they do. Well, I do, and we've shown it time and time again in our organization. There's people that are committed to taking Washington to this next piece. And, you know, we have a lot of new hires, and that's been exciting. And there's a lot of titles, and we're looking at all these people, and I keep telling people that'll hear me, the only title that matters is the one Toronto has. And if we can focus on that energy on that, how they get there, you know, we can't microwave it. There's not an injection that we can take to get us there quicker. But the plan that we have, I think we'll get there much quicker than maybe people think, only because we sat around, put a lot of time, energy, and effort into this. It wasn't something that we just said, hey, throw a dart at the wall. So we get a lot of free advice from people such as yourself. And you know, I appreciate Andrew. I wrote everything that he said down. And Candace and Fred, and taking it back. We have a suggestion box at work. Now, it's right on top of the paper shredder. But I'm going to put all those things in there, and I promise we're going to listen.
When it became your job, when you were officially hired, what were your top priorities, you know, going into this offseason, knowing everything that was going on with John's injury and mm-hmm. Bradley's contract? What were your top priorities?
Well, you're saying when I got in April or when
I guess when you went along this process, when you were putting your own imprint on it, what were your priorities?
Well, the priorities were to communicate with the players that we currently have. They're the most important piece because we have them. They're under contract. We had to make decisions on who to keep and who was going to have to go. We really didn't go into free agency with an idea of who we were going to lose, but we knew we had hard stops on numbers. But before free agency ever happens in the NBA's strange way, we do the draft first. And in the draft,
maybe that'll change.
It's possible.
It's possible.
It's absolutely possible. But I think the most important thing for us was to really evaluate the draft. Such a kind of a freaky draft, right? You know, 28 draft picks got exchanged. An awful lot of movement around, especially in the first round. Picks were getting moved in left and right. So what we are essentially telling you in the NBA, it was a draft that maybe wasn't as exciting for the top to be. Like, these are franchise-changing players. The bottom, same stuff. It was an unpredictable draft. So for us, we just said, okay, who do we really genuinely think can be a game changer for us, this franchise? And we whittled down data-driven, character-driven, all the things that we look at, cognitive testing, medical assessments, all the things. One name just kept coming back because that name was on our board last year. We thought Rui was coming out last year. So we always had him in mind as somebody that would be very good in a Wizard uniform. We were projected to have the sixth pick, and that's kind of where we would have taken him at six. I mean, there was no hesitation. But really what we wanted to do in that draft was add additional things and the ability to go to your ownership. And again, not being full-time at that time, I just said, look, what we're going to do is a legacy thing for me is all the moves we make were done for the franchise, not for Tommy Shepard. So if I don't get this job, the moves that we make today, everybody's going to come in, they're going to look and say, that was the right move. He didn't do it to save his job or to do something temporary. And I thought that getting an opportunity to move into the second round, get a player like Admiral Schofield, made sense for us. We needed hardworking players, defensive-minded, great role player. I know there's a few people in here that know the Celtics and follow the Celtics. I always thought of Admiral, he kind of brings a little Jay Crowder to the table, even though Jay's not there anymore. But there's kind of that toughness in him, maybe a P.J. Tucker down the road. We didn't have that. And as a rookie, you come in the door, and you're a four-year player. As a rookie, you come in the door, you play for Rick Barnes, you play for Mark Few. That kind of is a really – it's a rookie by name, but it's not a rookie. It's somebody that's played a lot of basketball with four good coaches. So those guys came in the door. We added second-round picks additional for the future. That was very important to me and to our staff. And I think – taking chances on guys. Justin Robinson, I've watched him all the entire time in Blacksburg, a hell of a competitor. I never saw him lose until he lost to Duke in our building, which I mentioned to him at least once a day. And Garrison Matthews, there's a guy that just the numbers drove us to him. He's an incredible shooter. Why not take a chance on a two-way? So all of a sudden there's four players. Then we did the Laker trade. And now you add three players that are also, all these guys are under the age of 23. So in two nights, right, and the day that we did the trade on draft night, you had seven players that are 22, 23 years and younger. And now we have John Thompson III is on staff. I said, these guys are it's the same age as your Georgetown teams. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the way the NBA is. I don't check passports. We don't check IDs. I don't care how old you are. If you're in this league and you're going to draw a paycheck, you got to go out and play. You got to compete for time. And you have to make an impact on this roster. If you can play, you can stay. If not, we're going to move players out of here because we're trying to find as many people as we can in the next this entire season is about developing players to see, hey, are you part of this core for the future? Are you part of something that we can help us to get something better? It's a very plain, transparent process. Our players are here because they want to be here because we acquired them all. Every player on this roster, we had fingerprints on.
A big part of the rebuilding process is your relationship with the head coach. Now, you were part of, you know, the team that hired Scott Brooks a few years ago. When you, you know, fully took over there, were you completely on board with continuing with Scott in that job? I mean, how would you describe that relationship between you and Scott?
Well, it's almost like I'm not trying to recuse myself, but Scott and I go back 28 years. You know, I've known him forever. I know his character. I know him as a player. I knew him when he was
very average player back in the day, as I often tell him. Very average.
And still to this day.
Still, yes.
So,
yes.
But in the time that I've known him, and when he got into coaching, he's with Paul Westhead in the ABA and out in LA, and you know, that was somebody I kept hinting when I was working in Denver to Kiki Vandeweghe, this is the kind of guy we need around here. And finally working with Scotty, I got Kiki to bring Scotty in. He loved him. Let's hire him. Get Scotty, boom. And we'd always talk, hey, let's work together someday. So Scotty comes to Denver. Family comes over to my house. We have a great dinner. 2 days later, I said, hey, I just got a call, man. I'm taking a job in D.C. But one day we're going to work together. And he never quite got over that moment, but we kind of knew the whole time down the road, just we had similar interests. We saw the game the same way. I think we genuinely love people. We want to see people do well. And just kind of got him to come to D.C. originally. And then when the decision, you know, was made and I was able to stay on, it was never a decision to me that to make it. It was never on the drawing board to make a change. And you have to just adjust your focus. Where Scotty was, first year come in with 49 games, and we screwed around at the end of the season. We should have been well over 50 wins and be able to go to game 7 in the second round. You felt like this is a perfect coach. And then life happens, and nobody cares about whatever happened. Injuries happen. The fans don't care. You got to keep moving. But now we're at a different place with different players, and I have more confidence in Scotty than ever because he's been in that place before. You know, his best – work, in my opinion, always was in Okie City before all those guys became MVP players, developing them to a level of expectations every day of being professional, all the things that they put in to ply their craft. Certainly they were drafted well, and they did a great job identifying those players, but you still have to get it out of them. And he did that. So I said, hey, find that blueprint, go home, look in your closet. I know you got it somewhere, but dust it off because we have to do it again. We got to start from scratch. But the good news is you're starting out with a two-time All-Star already in your arsenal, and then you have a 5-time All-Star that's redshirting for a while. Whenever he comes back, that's a good starting point. It's a lot further than people think we could be, and I like the young players we have, and I think as we clean up our cap sheet moving forward, there's a lot more opportunity to add exciting pieces, interesting pieces, and that's what it's about. You got to identify your core, and you got to add to that core, and you have to add logically. You can't just keep paying and overpaying and overpaying. I think fans understand the frustration. Fans just want to see your team do well. Mm-hmm. And you're not responsible for our cap. We don't ask you guys to donate. There's not a GoFundMe so we can go get a player. It's on us. But if you keep overspending, as you know, there's players that are similar stats, and one makes 15 mil and one makes 6. You got to say which one is probably the best for our long-term solution. It's usually the cheaper one.
Was that
one.
The mindset with Satoransky this offseason?
That one broke my heart. You know, yeah. Thomas and I are very, very close, but this is show biz. It's not show fans. It's not show family. And I think there was a hard stop that we had in mind, knowing that what was coming back to us financially. And it's a good situation for him. I'm very proud of him. I'm glad that we were able to develop him to get that kind of a contract. For us, it just financially, the future said, you know, let's not try that again. We just get out on the other side of some bad situations and you get yourself in a mess right away going back and saying, well, it's a little steeper than we want, but we really love this. You know, you're repeating the past, you're going to get the same results. And we had a hard stop there on his contract, and it actually ended up being a good deal for both sides. We got some extra draft picks back, and I think it gave us an opportunity with Ish Smith. We know Ish is the perfect point guard right now, what we need to do the way we want to play. But he's also going to be a great backup to John in the future and a great – I don't use the word culture. That reminds me of either cottage cheese or you got to go get your strep throat or something. But environment, he improves our environment every day.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's get to the meat of it, because this season you guys will be kind of ground zero for trade talks, especially at least until you get, you know, to February. It just, am I wrong? Well, come on, that's what it is. It's, you know, Bradley Beal, you know, everybody's going to be talking about him. What has it been like in the last few months? Has it been like a lot of people sort of describe that, you know, teams calling all the time, trying to take your temperature on whether or not you're going to trade Bradley Beal? What's it been like?
Hang on, Darren, did my phone ring? No. I got him waiting for a call.
Is it Maury, M-O-R-E? No, okay.
No, Daryl's got a burner now.
Daryl's got a burner account. Okay. All right.
No, we don't. I don't.
Does Pat Riley use a does he text? Does he?
No.
No.
There's. You just make money. Put a tip jar out.
I'm doing what I can.
Funny guy.
I'm doing what I can.
I'm going to tell you the same thing I continue to tell everybody. Bradley is a cornerstone for us. Mm-hmm. And you can search high and low. You can get a ton of picks, a ton of all these other things, and one day hope to God that you can get a player like Bradley Beal. So before we do anything, I just look for his commitment to us. But I also flip the script. Hey, we got to show him we're worthy of him staying here. And what you guys are alluding to is that it's a terrible, terrible term that's emerged in the last year and a half in the NBA. It's called pre-agency. We're talking about somebody who's got 2 years left on their deal. It's insane. And I know you got to write about stuff, and I understand all that. But I would also caution people, look, this is not an Armageddon situation for us whatsoever. I know the tone setter, the pace setter of our franchise has been Bradley Beal. And that didn't start in September. It started at the end of last season after player exit meetings, and he was transparent and brutally honest throughout. This is what we need to do for this franchise. These are the players we need to get. So every day I ask him, how are we doing? You look around. You know, it's like I believe in that. In a work environment, you need to ask everybody that works there, how are we doing? And I think he's looking out, and he's seeing the young players, and he's turning around, and everybody's lined up behind him. And what do we do next, Brad? And I told every player that we onboarded, I said, the only thing you have to do, work as hard as Bradley Beal. You do that, and you got never going to have a problem here. And they're like, oh, that's bad. I can remember that. And then they go watch Brad, and they're like, what else can I do? He works pretty damn hard. I don't know if I can do all that. So you better do all that, because you're not going to be here if you don't. So Bradley's been fantastic, and we communicate every day very, you know, it's funny how relationships change over the years. He came into us. He's the youngest player, 19. In that draft, he turned 19 the day of the draft, and we used to talk about Gators and grassroots basketball and rap and different things. Now we talk about, how do you get your kid to sleep at midnight? You know, like, life changes. He's got two kids now. He's got a beautiful family, and our conversations have matured as he's matured. He came to us at 19. I've seen the evolution and where it's going, and I saw the same thing with John Wall, and I know that we have the character piece. I know we have the data piece. All the things that we ask to play for the Wizards, Bradley has it exponentially. So we're not in any sort of rush to hear from him. But I would expect that he's making it very clear by his actions, this is where I want to be. Mm-hmm. And he, make no mistake, he's the cornerstone face of the franchise. He's taken the leadership role. He's run with it. It's not him auditioning for a role in Hollywood. This is hey, you're the face of the franchise. There's a great expectation when much is given. Mm-hmm. And he's done nothing but everything we asked him to do. Mm-hmm. So if there's any signs of anything untoward, come on, man. It's not who he is. You don't know the character of the kid if you question his commitment to us. And certainly I think we're trying to show him the commitment we want to make to him is, don't do the short buys. Don't do the, hey, let's sign this guy no matter what so we can win 35 wins. Is that going to keep him here and keep him interested so we can get 36 wins? What's going to keep him here is he's saying, hey, we're going to win and sustain success for a long time. And sometimes you got to take a hard look at yourself and the cap sheet and say, man, if we do these things now, we'll benefit in the future. If we don't do these things and we go back and we, you know, you try to take the easy shot, we'll pay for it for a long, long time, and we'll lose what Bradley's about. The essence of Bradley is don't BS me, I don't BS you. We're going to show you by what we're doing. Our actions are our words. And that's what we've done. And I look at him, and it's right back.
Does
it's
it
a
not,
long answer, isn't it?
It is. But You mentioned
I got a shot clock. I'm trying to slow play you so I get off of here.
No shot clock here. You mentioned the whole pre-agency idea, and it's true. That's kind of become a thing in today's NBA. But guys no longer, I mean, it happened with Anthony Davis last year, but guys no longer have to make a trade demand to effectively make a trade demand. If they don't sign a contract extension that year before they go into free agency, in some ways that is a trade demand. Is that a clock in your head kind of that, you know, you have to get this guy wrapped up by X date or else it does become a legitimate thing?
No, and this isn't for the Wizards. This is at the NBA at large. Is you still have to go out and play. You still have to protect your game, the integrity of your game. So if this isn't where you'd want to be shutting it down, it's kind of that old equation, like the team that really wants you and they see your actions and you're going to shut it down and you're going to do these things. Do you really want to go get that player and think he's not going to do that for you? Not that that happened in any town that you might be familiar with. Or just in general, is that the kind of thinking that goes into this? Because these aren't like IKEA, let's go grab a couple new bedspreads and stuff, and that's real cheap. These are very expensive decisions. And if you make them with a short term in mind, it might leave a long term scar. So you better know what you're getting into. And the more it plays itself out around the league, been around 26 years, stuff is happening now. It feels like it's for the first time. It's always been that way. Some people just want to get out of the town. They go to another town that they really choose to be in instead of the town that they're in. That's happened forever, and it will continue to happen. But there's also just as many people that, hey, I'm going to stick this thing through, and they stay in their franchise. They stay anchored. We're really a strange team in that, you know, John Wall, only player left in his draft class. He's with us 10 years. Bradley Beal, 8 years. I appreciate the love on the draft, and the best drafting we ever did was taking John Wall and taking Bradley Beal. And those were the ones that changed the franchise. The other pieces come in, and they be star in their roles. Maybe one of them, two of them can be stars one day, but the best thing to do is you get the heavy lifters, put people around them, and I think we were on that track, and life happens, you know, and every time you get someone hurt and you call the league and say, do we still have to play? The answer is always yes. So what are you going to do? Let's go. Let's figure it out.
So the other piece of that puzzle is John Wall and his injury, I guess, likely to keep him out all season long this year. Are you like everybody else where you're just kind of waiting and seeing what he looks like when he comes back? What, if anything, that injury kind of robs him of? What kind of player he can still be? Is that sort of your mindset at this point?
You know, I think the biggest challenge for me with watching John is to always have the empathy for the battle between the ears is as heavy as the one to get healthy. Because if every day he comes in, I ask him, hey, how's your leg doing? How's your foot? How's your foot? He starts to realize, man, these guys just care about my foot. So you got to really have that empathy, John.
So how do you keep him engaged like that? Because Boston had that problem with Gordon Hayward in his year off, trying to keep him engaged.
It's tough, but you start around, you try to think about the best ways to surround him with people. And we did. We signed Isaiah. We have a history here I'm very proud of. It goes back to Deshaun Stevenson, Sean Livingston, Martell Webster, Mike Scott, you know, guys that maybe it's a tough situation for them and they're at a crossroads in their career. Come here, you'll get your career back. I'm very proud of Sean and what he was able to do. When we claimed Sean, we brought him in. It was on a 10-day. God bless the late Henry Thomas. I called Hank and said, hey, because Sean was thinking about retiring. He was done living in Miami. And Sean, come try this. So now fast forward all this time, and here's a free agent who I vaguely remember dropping, I think it was 53 on us in a playoff game. I think it, you know, come on.
I was there for that. That was, yeah.
It got left a scar on my heart forever. But I know the person. I've known him forever. He's from Tacoma. My wife is from that area. We're very familiar with a lot of the same people, and I've known about him, known him since he was in high school. So now here's a guy that's trying to get his good name back, get his game back going, and he lost out on a lot of money due to an injury. And we have a star player that has his money, but he's not playing due to injury. I can have a lot of sympathy for John. Isaiah can have empathy, but he can also tell John, get up, get after it. I've been where you're at. I'm running. I'm going after this. No bad days. And that's kind of my mantra with John, no bad days. Some days are just going to be better than others, but don't have a bad day because a bad day in rehab can put you back a week on the back end. And I can tell him that, or Isaiah can tell him that. Which one do you think he's going to listen to? That's like, you don't know what you're talking about. You have never had this. Well, he can't say that to Isaiah. And that meant a lot to us. So that person we got, as much as the player we got, was valuable. And I think there's a great ending to this story for Isaiah, and there's great – I like the way it's lining up. But for me, going back to your original question about 10 minutes ago, Isaiah has helped get John motivated. But I have to always remind myself, John is far tougher than people even can believe. So if he says he's, you know, I'm 60%, you have to do some mathematics. Okay, so that's 20%. And keep going, because John will play. I've seen him play with broken bones in his hands, bone spur, all these different things, whatever it takes. That's what he truly loves to do. So we have to absolutely exercise caution, because we're not trying to get John to play this year. We're trying to get him to play the rest of his career. And if he can play this year, great. But the bigger picture is the bigger picture.
Do you think he plays this year?
I think he's going to do everything possible to get in the very best shape, very best health he can be, and we'll make a decision when he is in that shape and that health. I don't want to put any pressure on him. I don't want to mislead fans. I don't want to say something and say, man, I know I said that day, and that was true that day, but now it's not. Let's just let it play itself out. If he's ready, we will know, he will know, and we'll deal with it then. But the great thing for us is watching him every day. That is someone that genuinely loves basketball at a whole different level. And players out there that maybe like the game a lot, or, you know, I'm pretty cool with basketball, they see that, they're like, you can't fake that, what he's got. So I got to ratchet it up. And I love that. I love Justin Robinson, Chris Chioza, these young guys walking in, having to see John and Bradley work. Because our coaches do a great job. They set the tone for these players. But peer pressure, peer to peer, is the best way to get guys motivated. And John works very, very hard.
Does the, you know, you mentioned at the top of this that, you know, maybe we might get back a little faster than people think, that it's, you know, does the state of the NBA kind of give you that hope? I mean, this, we've kind of broken up the super teams, at least for now anyway, and it's become kind of a duo-driven league. If John comes back all the way, and if he can get back to being close to the player he once was, suddenly you do have that kind of duo, and maybe fleshed out by young guys that are a year, 2 years, 3 years in, that could be ready to contribute to a winning team.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we deal with the reality of where we're at today. I don't want to even think that much further down the road, but I do. I know what if John is 80%, you say, well, he's got 80% of his speed back. That's still faster than about 95% of the league. But you can't put the pressure on that. The game has changed even in the last 2 years, and that's what I keep teasing him. It's like, you got to be a coach. You got to watch these games and realize how really relevant the three ball is. It's so different even than 2-3 years ago. And that's what he's really working on quite a bit behind closed doors. His three-point shot looks fantastic, actually. And he's doing a lot more of shooting on the move. And I think he's adding to his game because he's watching the game and he knows that, you know, maybe the way I played even 2-3 years ago, I have to do it a little bit different. And, you know, as rough as it was, as injured as he was when he walked off his last game last season, I think he was still in 20-plus and third in the league in assists and stuff. And I know that's pretty bad for some people, but we're pretty happy with those kind of numbers. But the only ones that matter is that WL. That's the number we're looking for, and that's the one he wants. So I don't – when guys are injured, you got to be real cognizant that let's stay where you're at right now and evaluate every day and don't look too far down the road. But – to answer your damn question, yes. I think we getting John and Brad will be a hell of a lot better. Mm-hmm. I know I'll do a much better job if both of them are healthy.
100%. Before I let you go, you have
You were always smart like that.
You know, that's how it goes. Before I let you go, you have Wizards fans here. You got Wizards fans listening to the podcast. What would you define as a successful season this year? You said it's not about getting 35, 36 wins. That's not sort of the end game. How would you define success this year?
I think watching everybody month to month, we have goals that we're going to make, mandatory goals, right, that we have to look at and strive for every month. It's the game within the game.
Not defined by wins and losses necessarily.
I don't think you can do that because if you miss, you'd say this is the number of wins required to say this is a success, and you're one game short of that, then, oh, it's all a failure. You know, it's not about that. For us, young players, minutes that they're going to reach, what they're able to contribute while they're playing, that's one goal. Creatively, defensively, seeing our offensive, defensive ratings, those things got to go up. And we really invested in the offseason, and Mr. Leonsis made a tremendous commitment to us to improve both ends of the floor and do some unconventional things. You saw us hire, you know, Mike Longobardi at the defensive end. He's really helped us. Corey Gaines, tremendous thinker in the up-tempo basketball we need to bring to the floor. And then adding Dean Oliver, who can really help us in the self-scout get better and play smarter and outthink the other team possibly, which is hard to do in the NBA, but give us a different lens than when maybe the one we've been using to look at. Just those three alone were very valuable free agents we didn't have. And then adding to the player development staff, those things. So when you look at offensive rating, where we were, where we can be. Defense, bring those numbers up. Particularly at the defensive end, I think there's a lot more achievable goals. Because offense wasn't our problem. We were a very offensive team. We were a very offensive team, right? Too, when you're not defending anybody, that offends most basketball fans. We've got to get better doing both. I really do believe the goals that we're setting show development. With accountability, you're going to show growth. That's the most important thing. If we can see Rui show each month, hey, he's getting better in these key areas, and it can't just be the stat sheet. Did he remember plays? Can he execute? We like to say, can a coach count on this kid with two on the clock? That's a big question, because that means sideline out of bounds, baseline out of bounds, we got to drop this play, you got 2 seconds. Can I count on him to execute that? That shows progress. The trust that a coach has in players and putting them in the game. That's going to be the big thing. And then how much we utilize the go-go to develop our players, I think that's going to be a huge sign of success, because we got all these young players that are capable of playing minutes for the go-go to get better for the following season here. So those are the kind of goals. But I don't discount the NBA season has to go unfold and you have to play the games. I think we got guys that are looking at their number of wins in their head. I'm not going to tell them no.
You know, I scored 2 points in a G League game once.
I know that. I was hoping.
Video of it out
I'm there. Sorry I don't keep looking out, but there's these blinding lights. The thousands of people that are here, they're wondering why I don't make eye contact, and I apologize for that, but these lights are killing me. But I had it clipped. I was going to put it on the screen.
The screen, yeah.
Yeah, but they said.
You know who I scored on that game? Kobe Carl.
You know what? Kobe.
Busted him.
He
it was
retired.
A tremendous move.
He retired right after that. It
he
broke
did.
His heart.
Why wouldn't you? It's humiliating to
But people, do they have the scouting report on you?
Unathletic. Will shoot at a moment's notice.
Like, your words, not mine.
I was a gunner. They ran. This was and Brad Jones, who is now a coach in somewhere. He was the coach of the Utah Flash team, and he ran like three consecutive plays for me. And it was the third one where I think I ball faked Kobe Carl 6 times, just like going up and down, up. Finally, flung something up there, and made it. I immediately signaled to the bench, like I'm out. Like just give me the warm up jersey.
The basketball gods kissed
it.
You on the head.
That was it. I got my two, and it's immortalized in. I think it was in Boise, Idaho for that game.
You're like the Moonlight Graham of riders there. That's
of course,
good.
Strong performance by me.
But Chris was one of the most connected people in the NBA. The way he came up was organic. He was a locker room attendant. And the most connected people in the NBA arenas, anywhere you go, they start in that locker room.
Yeah, and that's
the relationships he made with players.
Which is, and your coach, by the way. Your coach, Scott, was, as a player, and he and I have talked about this before, I distinctly remember one of my years as a ball boy, Scott came up to me and said that you Boston ball boys suck. You're the second worst in the league behind Atlanta. He said, Atlanta, they just roll the balls at you, but you guys are the worst. And that was the genesis of the Scott Brooks relationship.
And, you know, and he meant it, you know.
He meant it. Of course he meant it. Yes,
but I think relationships are such a tricky thing because they take time. You can't just step in and say, hey, I want you to trust me today. I just met you. You have to show people every day and that. I give you credit. You carved out a hell of a niche for yourself. Nobody realizes he's actually one of the bigger boxing people on the planet. That's what we share more than anything. So
that's right.
That.
Those are often our conversations about
darn
boxing.
Straight.
There. Tommy, thanks for joining me here. Good luck this season. Always appreciate your time, man.
My man, good to see you.
Thank you, everybody,
for coming
out tonight. Thank you for my panel. And thanks for listening to the podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.